Democrats lose a candidate in the U.S. Senate race, Republican gubernatorial candidates defining themselves, plus an Indiana Chamber of Commerce report card, and more. From the television studios at WFYI, it's Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 15th, 2023.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, Democratic U.S. Senate candidate Keith Potts announced he is dropping out of the race to succeed outgoing Senator Mike Braun.
About 5 months after launching his bid, Potts announced on social media he won't move forward with his campaign. Potts is an Indianapolis City County Councilor, and after opting against a re-election bid for that office this year, Potts now says new professional opportunities will mean he won't run for the U.S. Senate. Potts' departure from the race leaves Mark Carmichael and Valerie McRae as the two Democratic candidates vying for the open seat. Congressman Jim Banks and John Rust are both seeking the Republican nomination.
Is this a concerning development for Democrats? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Ann Delaney. Republican, Jennifer Hollowell. John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers.
And Ebony Chappelle, market director with Free Press Indiana.
I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse Bureau Chief Brandon Smith. Jennifer Hollowell Potts wasn't the only Democrat running, as it pointed out in the piece, but what does it say about their viability in the general election next year?
Well, first of all, I think that Democrats have very little chance to win statewide races in Indiana right now, the governor's race, the U.S. Senate race, regardless. So I assume he said it was because of professional opportunities or something. Before I saw that, I thought potentially it was the challenge of getting the signatures to get on the ballot, because that is no small feat and is difficult. But I do think it's smart for the Democrats to just have one candidate so that they aren't kind of sharing resources or fighting over resources when they're already pretty much outnumbered from a statewide campaign perspective. But all of that said, I mean, I think that Congressman Jim Banks is positioned very well and obviously is already running a strong campaign ready for anything, you know, leave no stone unturned. So I think that he will be successful.
Is there any way to spin this as anything but negative for Democrats?
No, I think it's positive. You look at the Republican primary contest for governor. That is exactly, as a state party chair, you don't want to see happen, because it is divisive, it's expensive, and it makes for really bad feelings among the losers afterwards. Mark Carmichael's been out early and gathering support early, and it's not really a big surprise. Having said that, he is going to do a clear alternative to Jim Banks, who is to the right of Attila the Hun on every issue. I mean, he's an election denier. He's probably a homophobe. We know he's against LGBT rights, and certainly is terrible about a woman's right to choose. So there are all kinds of reasons in the general election for Hoosiers to look for an alternative to somebody who makes Donald Trump look reasonable, and that is a feat.
Keith Potts, young, would have been the first openly gay candidate for U.S. Senate in this state if he had won that primary from Indianapolis. Mark Carmichael doesn't have quite the same profile. He's been around a long time, not very well known outside of real inner politics circles as a lobbyist.
Well, north in Anderson, where he's from.
That's true, but certainly older, on the older end of the scale. Is he the sort of candidate that Democrats can get excited about?
I think that it proves a lot of challenges in terms of getting the voter base excited and energized to show up. I felt really good about Keith Potts, but I understand, you know, things happen. So I'm hoping that the Democrats can see this as an example and an opportunity to start to get other people prepared for future races. But I feel like Carmichael is, you know, a good candidate for them to put forth because of the things that he's really interested and concerned about. But yeah, I do think it presents quite a few challenges.
Yeah, I mean, is this in some ways a step backwards in this race for Democrats?
Well, you know, the argument can be made, and I've heard Ann make it, so I always smile when she says this is what a chair, a former chair, wants. You know, you don't want people fighting. But if, in fact, I've heard her argue the opposite, too, and in yeoman service to the cause.
You do it in the same answer.
I know. So I learned well. But where if you have a lot of people vying for that nomination, the line then is, that is a great way to harden and hone and burnish the bona fides of these candidates and make sure that they are prepared for whatever they might see in the general election. So there are two sides, as the late Rex Early would say. No matter how you slice it, whoever the Democratic candidate is at a disadvantage at this point in the race. Now, could factors change? Yes. Could something as, say, abortion be a mobilizing factor? We've seen the Supreme Court, you know, now will be taking up the Mifepristone case. And there are a lot of people saying, you know, lest you forget, we had the case this week that got a lot of attention that's still sort of unfolding in Texas.
It brings it to people's minds. It's a reminder of how potent
that issue can be. And so, never say never. The ultimate cliche.
All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question, and this week's question is, who will win Indiana's 2024 U.S. Senate race? The Republican, the Democrat, or the Libertarian candidate? Last week's question was, should more students be held back if they don't pass the third grade reading proficiency test? 72% of you say yes, just 28% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, speaking of a race with a lot of people in it, a clearer picture emerged this week of how Republican candidates for governor are each trying to define themselves in the race, as U.S. Senator Mike Braun, former Secretary of Commerce Brad Chambers, Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch, businessman Eric Doden, and former Attorney General Curtis Hill participated in a panel discussion at the annual Denton's Legislative Conference. Crouch made a splash earlier this year endorsing complete elimination of the state's individual income tax, and she pivoted to that proposal often, even to a question about how to ensure public safety.
And I'll start by axing the tax, putting thousands of dollars into the pockets of active and retired first responders.
Hill, whose law license was temporarily suspended while in office for criminally battering four women, leaned heavily into ultra-conservative issues. He voiced opposition to abortion, LGBTQ rights, and mask mandates, including in a question on education.
If we can teach children to think critically about the world around them, then they will not succumb to radical indoctrination.
Braun often talked about his auto parts distribution business, including in an answer about removing barriers to economic growth.
We got some of the highest health care costs in the country with some of the poorest outcomes. I took that on in my own business over 15 years ago.
Chambers stressed his economic development background. He said the number one job for a governor is growing the economy.
We have to play economic offense because everyone around us is. And to keep these kids here, we need to recruit high-wage industries. We need to continue to invest in entrepreneurship and innovation.
Doden repeatedly emphasized the need to revitalize small towns.
We cannot be a state where only four or five counties are growing population and doing well.
Braun participated via pre-taped video messages, and Jamie Rittenour, also a Republican candidate, did not take part.
And Delaney, I know you're plugged into the GOP primary voter base, but which message, as you hear them, do you think will resonate best with GOP primary voters?
Oh, I think whichever one takes them as far right as you can be on all of the social issues. I think that's what they care about. But having said that, you still have to pivot from the primary to the general election. And you also run on the record of the Republican Party that's been in control for the last 20 years. You know, we started education reform in 2011. 86% of the third graders could pass the reading proficiency. Now it's 81. When Mitch Daniels was there, it was only, you have to grow individual income. We have to be at the national average. We're at 89% of the national average. He then said you had to send more people to post-high school education. We had 65% before. We now have 53%. Then they talk about cutting taxes. For the average Hoosier, the percentage that they pay in taxes has not changed 0.1% during all their years there. They pay 10%. They paid 10% of their income when Republicans took control, and they pay 10% now. These tax cuts benefit corporations and maybe other people, but certainly not the average Hoosier. That's the record they're running on, and they have had one-party control for decades. And their reports and their rankings are awful. And they need a fresh approach, and none of those five candidates presents it.
Jennifer, considering you work for Brad Chambers, I'm guessing if I asked you which message resonates best, I would know what your answer is. But To Ann's point, which is true regardless of party, you have one message in the primary generally and then a different message in the general election. Is that how you see this? Is they have one message now and will pivot slightly more towards the center after the primary is over?
I don't think so. I don't. Most of those messages, you know, they talked about health care, education, taxes, public safety, jobs in the economy. Those are issues that matter to Republican primary voters and general election voters. They may take different stands on them, but I don't think any of those candidates that you saw are going to change dramatically at all what their message is from the primary to the general. And I do think that the forum was a really good opportunity for people to see the similarities and the differences among the candidates. And you mentioned that I'm backing Brad Chambers. But I would say that all of them, I thought, performed very well, and they all did a nice job of highlighting issues that are central to their individual campaigns, different.
They may be central, but that group, have been in control for 20-some-odd years.
But voters keep putting them.
I don't think they understand what the record looks like. Maybe.
John, she just talked about we saw similarities and differences, not just in how they're trying to sort of define themselves, as we heard in the piece, but also we saw a little bit of criticism of each other. We saw multiple candidates, as we have, criticizing the Leap District, the economic development project in Boone County, and that was under Brad Chambers' tenure as Secretary of Commerce.
Suzanne Crouch's
tenure as Lieutenant Governor, although she's tried to sort of distance herself from the decision making.
But she is in charge of the Department of Commerce.
I guess technically. But there's also the question of there was some criticism of Suzanne Crouch's tax plan from notably Mike Braun, among others, saying he said it wasn't well thought through. Do you expect some of that to pick up starting essentially right now?
It has to. When you have such a large field and candidates are trying to differentiate themselves and stand out, that's the most effective way to do it. If everybody's, you know, using the same hymnal and maybe just trying to sing louder than the person next to them, it's not really going to work. You've got to find those issues that will be defining issues or wedges, as is often said, in the political arena. And I think what you see here to a large extent is sort of traditional Republicanism, as Hoosiers have practiced it over the past century, and populism, sort of the new Republicanism that I don't know if it was attributable certainly to Donald Trump, but was symbolic of what we saw in a very high-profile fashion and is certainly a standard bearer for those beliefs. And so you do see it's more nuanced than jobs are good. It's now about where are those jobs? Are they in urban areas, or are they going to come to the rest of the state where we're getting left out of we're not sharing in the bounty? So it's sort of this urban versus rural, the notion of business versus, well, elite corporate business, you know, that sort of Wall Street business versus the mom and pop. It's all about drawing these distinctions and these lines. And so it's not as simple as a message might have been 20 years ago, which is jobs are good. We're going to bring jobs. We're going to develop. It's much more nuanced about where the jobs are, what kind of jobs they are, and what tactics are being used to get those jobs. How transparent is the process? How perceived to be, you know, backroom deal making is going on?
And in particular, the finer details, because it's not like they're running against the opposite party. They can't go out there and say, well, we've been screwing things up for 20 years. Obviously, they're not saying they can't say those sorts of things.
Even though it's true.
I do want to ask, though, you know, Suzanne Crouch made the joke right at the start, which is, you know, we talk about with a field this wide, it could come down to fine margins as to who gets this nomination. And sitting on a stage with three other men and then one looming on the video screen above, Suzanne Crouch had the joke that, you know, it's clear that there's one thing separating her from everybody else on the stage. It's her red glasses. But could it be not the policy, but the personal that helps separate some of these candidates in the pack?
I mean, to the point that my fellow panelists made, when you have the messaging being so very close to each other, sometimes it really does come down to that when voters are deciding, you know, who do I pick over whatever. Sometimes optics is the thing that really draws people in. I find that to be very unfortunate. I wish there was, you know, more for them to choose from besides something so superficial. But, you know, I really think it could come down to that.
All right. Indiana is improving in some key economic areas, according to the latest report card released by the Indiana Chamber of Commerce this week. But in many areas, that improvement is being outpaced by other states.
The report cards, released every couple of years, are tied to the Chamber's Economic Vision Plan. It tracks metrics across a range of issues, everything from labor force participation and entrepreneurship to healthcare costs and educational attainment. Outgoing Chamber CEO Kevin Briniger says Indiana ranks in the top 10 of only 7 of the report card's 49 national measures.
The progress isn't happening fast enough because other states are improving at a faster pace. So we need to pick up the pace.
Incoming CEO Vanessa Green-Sinders says the Chamber will bring the report card's message to lawmakers, even as legislative leaders promise a quieter 2024 session.
There's many ways to accomplish things. Sometimes it's big things, sometimes it's small things, but we need to keep moving forward.
Areas where Indiana lags that the Chamber highlighted are healthcare costs and early childhood education.
Ebony, does the information in this report card clash with what we've heard from legislative leaders promising, we're going to quieter session, tweaking some things we've already done?
I think if they hope to make any true progress, it certainly does clash with the idea of having a quieter session. When you look at this report card and you see some of the areas that we're lagging behind in, particularly with early childhood education, there's a lot of opportunity for growth. So I hope that there's a lot of conversation around how to improve those things. There were some things that I found quite promising. One, the number of design patents that Hoosiers are taking out really points to, you know, a growth in entrepreneurial spirit in the Hoosier State, which is fantastic. But the fact that there is not that same increase when it comes to access to venture capital, I think, is an issue. When you look at health and quality of life, a severe issue. The fact that we're not spending as much as our national counterparts when it comes to that is a concern. And I think, you know, the fact that the General Assembly has released more funds for that, again, is promising. But I hope that there are less hurdles to access those funds for some of our healthcare providers. But yeah, I would anticipate lots of conversation and not so much quiet.
Yeah, I mean, certainly on the healthcare front, I think in the next report card, we'll see at least the spending on healthcare jump, because that doesn't take into account the investment that was just made in the last budget. But it strikes me, as we talk about the idea of a quieter session, of just tweaks and not big changes to a lot of things, it strikes me that I get it from the perspective of you're going into an election year, you don't want to do anything that's going to make people upset. But aren't you risking making people upset if the messaging is, well, hey, now we're trying not to do too much.
Well, and I'm an outlier. As I've said a couple times now on the show in recent weeks, I don't think it is going to be that quiet a session. I think leadership may say, if you're a leader, think about this. You don't want to say that a lot needs to be done, because that suggests that you haven't been working and doing it. So if you're a leader in a leadership position, a caucus leadership position, it would behoove you to say, we have been so effective in recent years. Now we just need to watch some of these changes settle in, take effect, and we'll reap the benefits, and then we can be done. That's not speaking for rank-and-file members of the caucuses. And the conventional wisdom is people want to get out of Dodge so they can go and work on their campaigns. I think anymore, because of what campaigns have become and because of the chords that are struck and sounded by candidates seeking to active mobilize their bases, they take advantage of this as the greatest opportunity for earned media to be strident, to be maybe even outlandish, what some would say is outlandish, but it so that they can go to their voters and say,
look what I did.
Well, look what I tried to do. And even if we didn't, if we didn't get it done, look what I tried. And in some ways, in this kind of bizarre world of politics that we live in now, a failed attempt, but done with in a vociferous and crazed fashion, may be worth more to some voters than actually getting something done.
Some that have to reap the harvest let me
ask you from this perspective, because we talked a little bit on the show about will this actually be a quieter session. Let me ask it from this perspective, which is, come mid-March, when they've adjourned sine die, do you think legislative leaders will go, well, this is a really quiet session?
I don't know, but just because it's quiet doesn't mean they can't do meaningful things. You know, so in terms of the report card and measures where we need to do more, we always need to be doing more. But things like the measures they're talking about to in terms of requiring, you know, passing the iRead exam before you proceed to fourth grade. Things like that are meaningful, and there are a lot of things, I think, that they can do that have maybe some more consensus and some bipartisan support that will help move the needle on all of these things. So I think quiet is, you know, in the eye of the beholder, but I do want to say that how wonderful it is to have the Indiana Chamber of Commerce do this work, the research that they do, bringing these report cards out, and, you know, to Kevin Brenniger, who's wrapping up
a long time,
long
20 plus years with the state chamber. You know, I think we really owe a lot to him. If you think of all the things that our state has accomplished and how we have excelled over the last couple of decades, and the state chamber was a part of that. And anyway, and I'm excited to see the new leadership as well as we tackle these issues to keep figuring out how can we, you know, succeed in this changing future.
And what I appreciate about the chamber's report card and its economic vision plan is, you know, they're obviously on the same page with the Republican supermajorities on a lot of issues at the Chamber of Commerce. But this isn't a, hey, look at how great we are and that's it. It was, yeah, we're doing some things but we aren't doing other things well enough,
absolutely,
and we need to be better, and I appreciate that.
And that's why the report card is important. But I'm not sure they're on the same page with a lot of issues of the supermajority anymore, because they have said over and over again that the social issues, the early childhood education and the need for daycare and health and all of these things that, yeah, you know, that the General Assembly supermajorities played with, okay, like their incremental increases in early childhood education, when everybody recognizes how important that is to success, and our numbers at the top level at graduation and college keep going down, you know, if they listened more to the Chamber of Commerce report card, I would be encouraged. But they don't. They pick and choose, and they do a little bit.
Indiana, speaking of the Chamber of Commerce, the Indiana 6th through 8th graders can now participate in the first statewide Civics Bee. The Indiana Chamber of Commerce and the State Department of Education partner with local chambers to create the competition.
The aim is to get kids more excited and engaged with civics in their communities. State Chamber Vice President Jason Beers says it gets to the heart of the chamber's mission to help people be informed, engaged citizens.
This seemed like kind of a fun, interactive way for kids to kind of show their civics knowledge, but also give you know, the business community kind of a role to play in helping to foster that kind of collaboration.
Chamber President-elect Vanessa Green-Sinders says civic engagement should be thought of as a business and economic issue.
Workforce is about education. It is about community, and it involves all of us.
Participation in the Civics Bee begins with an essay competition at the local level. You can find more details at indianachamber.com/civicsbee.
John, I think the average person, when they hear, oh, the state is creating a Civics Bee, they hear the Department of Education is partnering, oh, that makes sense. The Chamber of Commerce may not be as obvious a partner in that, but it was really spearheaded by the National Federation and the National Foundation through the state. How important is it then for groups like the Chamber of Commerce to be the ones pushing civic engagement?
I think it's incredibly important that every group of every stripe push everything possible to have an engaged, informed citizenry. We are, last time I checked, ostensibly a democracy.
A republic.
A republic.
A republic, John, is the...
Right.
Yeah, that's what they like to say.
But it all falls apart if you have...
Voter turnout like we have?
Well,
pointed out in that report card as well, very low voter turnout.
And we've made efforts to do it. But what it does, it creates race districts where there's no competition. I mean, so voters don't even really have a chance if there's only one person on the ballot to weigh in. Is that really a democracy?
Or if they're gerrymandered so that it makes no difference.
And I think we've become, the knee-jerk reaction is that government is somehow inherently bad, when in fact, what I learned growing up was we the people, we are the government.
Right.
And if we could restore some of this notion that we are in this collectively and we can strive toward common goals for the betterment of society, then we will have accomplished something.
Maybe we can even have ballot initiatives. How about that?
Finally, a judge in Ohio this week, or recently, offered a woman a creative way to reduce her sentence, working a fast food job. Now, the woman had admitted to assaulting a 17-year-old Chipotle employee by throwing a bowl of food in her face. Now, if the woman works at least 20 hours at a fast food restaurant for the rest of her 20 hours a week for the rest of her 6-month sentence, she can cut her time in half. Ann Delaney, Do you like judges getting creative with their sentences?
I think this is a great idea. I mean, it'll give her the perspective of what these poor fast food workers have to put up with obnoxious clients. I think it's great, and it saves time in jail, which is even better. That's costly.
Yeah. When I hear people say they want to bring back the draft every now and then, I agree, but not for military service. I think everybody should have to work a food service
McDonald's.
Job.
I 100% agree. I am a former service worker myself. I worked in many restaurant bars and hotels in Indianapolis. And something like this, I think, has the potential to, like we say, expose people to what the average Hoosier is dealing with on a daily basis.
Yes. Yeah. So. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers,
and Ebony Chappelle of Free Press Indiana.
You can find Indiana Week in Reviews. You can find Indiana Week in Reviews podcast and episodes at WFYI.org/IWIR or on the PBS app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.